Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers and the co-chair of the Endowment for the Business of Government. We created the Endowment in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. Find out more about the Endowment by visiting us on the web at endowment.pwcglobal.com. The Business of Government Hour features a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. Our conversation today is with Miguel Tirado, Associate Commissioner for Personnel in the Social Security Administration. Welcome, Miguel.
Nice to be here.
And joining us in our conversation is another PwC partner, Susan De La Garza. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning, Paul.
Well, Miguel, let's start by talking about SSA. Could you describe its mission and its activities for our listeners, please?
Basically, our mission is to fight on the side of the angels. You can't go wrong with that. Our mission, our work, is to ensure that employees in this country, and that's 96% of all workers, if something happens in their life, they die, they retire, they become disabled, that they don't fall into poverty. We do that, of course, by administering the Social Security programs that the Congress has put in place.
Miguel, what is your role in this mission as Assistant Commissioner for Personnel?
Well, we have 65,000 employees. We usually hire about 3,600 new employees every year. So it is the role of the office that I lead, the Office of Personnel, to ensure that we get the best qualified people for the very many different kinds of positions that we have. And of course, having done that, we also do the whole range of personnel functions, such as classification, paying 65,000 employees on time every month. Social Security Administration prides itself that it pays the right amount to the right person on time. And we usually say that with respect to our clients, the citizens that we serve. But in my particular shop, we pride ourselves that we pay 65,000 employees on time every 2 weeks without a hitch, among other things.
Right. Now, what kind of positions are included in your workforce, Miguel?
Well, we have most people think of Social Security employees as the people they see in the hometown Social Security office.
Right.
And of course, that is the bulk of our employees. That's about, I'd say, 55,000 of our 65,000. On the other hand, we hire everything from lawyers to systems experts, computer experts, obviously personnel specialists, administrative specialists. We even have environmental health people. We have nurses, doctors. So we hire across the spectrum of functions and careers.
Let's spend some time talking about your career. Could you tell us about your career in government?
Well,
and before.
I started life as a civil engineer way back as a transportation engineer. Came stateside from Puerto Rico to do graduate work in Boston. After I completed that, I worked for a while with the Hispanic community. Went to work from that with the city of Boston. I don't know if you recall back in the mid-70s, there was a big school desegregation order in Boston. And I was hired as a transportation director to run the school buses. That was a very interesting three years.
It was interesting.
Indeed. Right? After that, I figured I could do anything.
Right.
So I joined the federal government.
There you go.
Not only that, but it was a very demanding job and one that was very exhausting. So I began to look for something else. I joined the federal government, the Department of Health and Human Services. Eventually, somebody for whom I was working around 1986 got appointed as Commissioner of Social Security. And she said, I was at the time heading her particular agency's New York office. And she said, well, you come down and help me for 3 months with my transition to this new job. And that was in June 86. And she's long gone, and I'm still there. One thing led to another. We had a new commissioner who decided that she needed a new head of civil rights and equal opportunity, and she said civil engineer, civil rights.
I was going to ask civil how
engineer,
that worked
civil
out,
rights,
right?
Perfect match. So I got that job, not having any background in it, did it for 10 years, and I guess because I didn't know the what I was supposed to be doing, ended up doing a lot of different things, a lot of new things. I'm very proud that the agency, that SSA, Social Security, has become if not the leader, certainly one of the leaders in the area of diversity. And I mean functional diversity in terms of affecting the bottom line. And I would like to think that I had something to do with it. After 10 years of that, it was time to move on to something else. The person who was my predecessor mm-hmm. retired. I said, I'm interested. And much to my surprise, the boss said yes, and here I am.
That's great. What would you say to people who might be listening to us this morning about who might be considering a government career? What would you tell them based on your experience you just described to us?
Well, the first thing I would say is that there probably isn't a better time, hasn't been a better time to join the federal government than today. And that's because we're facing what everybody calls a retirement wave. There's going to be all kinds of people retiring over the next 10 years. I like to point out that for every retiree, we'll get at least three trickle-down promotions as a 15 retires,
okay.
a 14 gets promoted to backfill, a 13 to a 14, and so on and so forth. So the number of opportunities that will be available for advancement over the next 10, 15 years are going to be incredible. If you're a young person joining the government now, you're going to have a great open field in front of you if you have the right skills. The other thing is that regardless of what you say about working for government, you are doing something for the better of humanity. And
right.
that sounds trite,
right.
but it is true. And that combined with a decent working environment, with reasonable wages, you're not going to get rich, but you're not going to die of poverty either. And the opportunity to make a difference, I think, make for a good job.
Let me follow up on something you said a second ago. You said you were proud of the functional diversity within SSA. What did you mean by that?
Well, everybody talks about diversity. And we could talk about numbers. At Social Security, 72% of all employees are women. And that percentage holds not exactly, but pretty much throughout mm-hmm. the ranks. Hispanics are roughly 11% of the workforce. African Americans are roughly 26-27%. Asians are close to 3%. People with severe disabilities are about 2.6-2.8%. And not only at the lower end, but all the way through mm-hmm. the great scale. So that same kind of proportion that you see also obtains at the 15, the senior executive level. And the question is, why did we get there? And, you know, I would like to say that, yes, we did the right thing, which we did, and the legal thing, which we did. But the driving force was that about 10, 15 years ago, the agency realized that there was an impact on the bottom line of the agency, an agency that serves a population that is as diverse as the American population. It actually provides better service for less cost if our employee population, our workforce, reflects the diversity that's mm-hmm. out there in terms of the citizens that we serve. So coupled with a commitment to doing what's right and doing what's legal, I think the agency began to drive to try to have a workforce that reflected the people we serve as a business need. Let me give you one very concrete example of that. Several years ago, there was a lot of discussion about the possibility of interpreter fraud. Somebody who spoke a different language at home came in to get services. They brought a third-party interpreter, and there was some concern that too many errors were being made, that they needed to be corrected, and right. even the possibility of the interpreter causing some frauds. Well, if you want to eliminate interpreter fraud, what's the easiest way? Eliminate the interpreter.
Mm-hmm.
And you do that by hiring somebody into your workforce that is as trained and as capable as anybody else, but on top of that can serve another language. Well, today we have employees in our district offices that handle well over 50 different languages. And, of course, they tend to be distributed where there's a demand for those languages. Roughly 16% of the country's population speaks a language other than English at home, and that percentage is growing. That's just mm-hmm. one example. So in order to serve our own needs, as in our own business needs, we diversified, we engaged in diversity, and we've been very successful.
When you look back at your career, is there any one position that best prepared you for your current job?
Probably not. It's interesting because I came into this job without any hard background in human resources and in personnel. But I belong to the school that says, you know, if you're a good manager, if you progress through increasingly more difficult assignments through your career, you can't help but pick up a set of skills, managerial skills, executive skills, that will serve you well no matter what the particular subject matter of your job is. I might not be a personal specialist, and I don't pretend to be, but I can make good decisions.
Well, it's a good stopping point. It's time for a break. Return with us after the break as we continue our conversation with Miguel Tirado of the Social Security Administration. We'll ask him about the human resource flexibilities and the Managerial Flexibility Act when the Business of Government Hour returns.